You can do up that button, Elliot.
This is going to be a good podcast. I'm feeling extra sexy today.
That open shirt like that with the spring weather is really distracting me. I'm going to have to avert my eyes the entire podcast. Elliot, we're going to start the podcast off by revisiting an old favorite. And by old, I mean from 3 weeks ago. As some of the news starts to wind down a little bit around the NHL, and we'll get on the Ralph Krueger page and we'll talk about the Stanley Cup playoffs, which are ongoing, as we all know. Want to get back to doing word association with you, but this week we'll do a Final Four edition of word association. So three individuals from the remaining four teams in the NHL, just top of mind, the fully caffeinated Elliot Friedman. What do you say when I say the name Jordan Staal?
A horse. One of the strongest pound-for-pound players in the National Hockey League.
I think his nickname used to be Gronk when he first started in the NHL as well.
Mike Kadar was the strength and conditioning coach of the Pittsburgh Penguins at the time, and he said that Staal loved it when you put the extra weight on the sled as he ran with it.
Oh, he's that guy.
Yeah, he wanted that.
Have we sort of forgotten about Jordan Staal?
Well,
and
not anymore.
These playoffs have reminded us about Jordan Staal?
I think all the Staal brothers that's happened to. And part of the reason is they're not guys who like to call a lot of attention to themselves.
Yeah.
I've always admired the fact that they like to be understated. They've all gone through their challenges. We all knew that it was a great family with great people.
Yep.
The parents, Eric, Mark, Jordan, and Jared. Yes. But the thing I admire about them is Eric went through tough seasons. Jordan went through tough seasons. Mark went through the injury in some tough seasons. But they all persevere. Sometimes I think the toughest thing to do as a human being is persevere. And those guys, like, they're not just tough. They're tough mentally. Like, I got a lot of admiration for that family.
I am so on that page. I am much more interested in endurance as opposed to conquest.
Mm-hmm.
And that family endures.
Yes.
Don Waddell.
I've been told I should take investment advice from this man.
Hmm.
I've heard he is, in addition to, you know, everything he's done that we see, I've heard that he is very, very business savvy. One day we're going to get him on this podcast, and we're going to ask him about that.
And fashion tips, too, with the turtleneck. Stop.
I've heard that Don is very, very savvy.
Speaking of style.
Mm-hmm.
Former Harvard goaltender, Tripp Tracy.
First of all, I think that's one of the best broadcast teams in the National Hockey League.
Going away.
Forslund Tracy.
Yes.
Secondly, I don't think those guys have contracts for next year.
It's a lot of people without. It's not just them. There's a lot of that.
If I wanted to put a jolt into my coverage or whatever, I'd be looking at those two guys.
David Krejci.
Unappreciated. 100 points now in the playoffs. If you go back to his first playoff year was 2008, look at the guys who have more points in the playoffs from 2008 to now. Crosby, Malkin, Ovechkin, Backstrom, Patrick Kane, Taves, Hossa. Sources say that's pretty good.
And sources say they're all better skaters than David Krejci. Yet you talk about endurance, that guy endures.
Under-appreciated.
I'm always impressed with the player who's not the fantastic skater, but can compete at the highest level.
Yeah.
David Krejci. Torrey Krug.
Going to get paid. One more year before unrestricted free agency.
Yeah.
Pissed off Justin Williams. How hard is it to do that?
Well, there's another guy on the team that's kind of done the same thing, but yes, you expect that.
You expect that from Marchand.
Is that more a comment on Torrey Krug, or is that more a comment on Justin Williams?
I think it's a comment on how unglued Justin Williams was. You know, Torrey Krug, you know, another guy I have a lot of respect for, just in the sense that he's really carved a niche as a great player and an annoying little pest. And I say that as a compliment. Yeah. That Boston blue line, man, it's a lot better. Like, you know Chara, you know McAvoy, you know Krug. Like, even the other guys that we're all learning about, the Carlos, the Grizzlicks, the Cliftons.
Yeah.
It's a hell of a blue line. But Krug, after next year, he is going to get paid. And I wouldn't be surprised if Boston can't keep him, if the Red Wings are one of the teams that's jumping right up on him.
And since I spent so much of my youth there visiting my cousins, I always feel obliged, whether it's with Mike Modano or Ryan Kessler and now Torrey Krug, to mention he's from Livonia, Michigan.
Ernie Harwell, a man from Livonia, caught that ball.
Bruce Cassidy.
Great interview. Like, I watch him at the podium. I watch him at the podium. I watch him on the bench when NBC does the in-game interviews. He is a reporter's dream.
Do you want to be the coach of this team moving forward?
Absolutely. 100%.
Yeah, he's an elite player in the league at a young age. He's always played well against us, always played hard against us. Years ago, I remember Gretzky, why doesn't anybody hit that guy? Well, it's not that easy, right? So I think it becomes containment issues. Play him hard, play him honest, one-on-one, put him in where you want him to go. Obviously, if you can be physical against him, do it. But he's a good player.
Obviously, we're desperate, Hags, but this is the kind of thing we talked about yesterday, about trying to hit our ceiling. And certainly today, you know, as a coach, you're always looking for that. We got as close to it as I've seen in a long time.
What did that tell you about his situational awareness at the moment?
Yeah, he's turning over a new leaf, eh, Marshy? Well, listen, he's been in these games, big games, the Stanley Cup champion, so he understands, maybe a little more than meets the eye sometimes, that there's a time and a place to, and you really got to be disciplined. I mean, you got to be disciplined all the times, but there's certainly other times you really got to put yourself in check, so it's great for him to do that.
You know, we're not a team that runs from a physical game. I think it brings out the best in us at times. We just, like you said, you got to stay on the right side of things and make sure you score and defend while you're doing all that.
100 wins. Feels great. I'm looking forward to 101, Kevin, I guess.
I have had more than one person tell me this year, and it was a lot of guys who could have been in the Coach of the Year voting this year, mm-hmm. but he in particular deserved more credit than he received.
The second chance guy.
A second chance guy. You know, I'll tell you a story. I have asked him about this, and he said it's true. Those guys who played for him in Washington, they said when you have a new coach and he comes in, you're always wondered about the first thing they say. Okay, first day of training camp, how do they grab your attention? How does this coach make you want to compete for him? He blew it. That first day. Whatever he did, it flopped. And the players told me it started bad and it never got better. Mm. And he has admitted that that was true. He didn't remember specifically what was said.
I was going to say, what did he do?
No, but he said he couldn't remember specifically when I asked him, but he said he did realize it didn't go well.
Jay Bouwmeester.
Survivor.
Mm-hmm.
Was supposed to go on waivers this year. He was about a day away from going on waivers, I was told.
Really?
Yes.
Were you surprised at the one-year contract extension?
No. You know, the other thing, too, about Bouwmeester is we've always kind of joked about how he... You know, he's a terrible interview. He doesn't say anything. Guys have warned me that there's another side to Bouwmeester that we're not allowed to see outside the room.
Yeah.
Fiercely competitive, can be a real tough SOB. I saw it this year. He got benched in Toronto,
mm-hmm.
and I went to ask him about it, and he's like, no. And he looked at me like GTFO. And I said, okay. And I wasn't mad. Like, he was being scratched. He's sure. A pro. I get it. I was doing my job. He was giving me his answer. I had no problem with it. But I remember seeing that look in that moment. I'm like, I see what these guys are talking about.
You know, we love following the get Joe Thornton the cup story. Why do we not do same for Jay Bouwmeester?
You know why? Because he just doesn't get as much attention, right?
Alex Steen.
I don't know Alex Steen that well. Another survivor, I would say. I don't know him that well. The one story I remember with Alex Steen was when we first started putting cameras between the benches, there was one time like he was holding his hand during a game and the camera turned and looked at him. And I won't say who the cameraman was, but he told me that nobody gave him more crap in that moment than Alex Steen ever did. That's the story I remember with Alex Steen. He said, the cameraman said to me, do you get along with Alex Steen? I said, I don't really know him that well. He goes, nobody unloaded at me harder ever than Alex Steen did in that moment. That's the story I always remember.
He'd be a great one to get on the podcast. Between him and his dad and life and hockey,
oh, yeah.
All of it.
Oh, yeah. He's seen everything, that guy.
Doug Armstrong.
We've had our battles. I like to see people succeed at the end of the day. That's where I'll go.
Peter DeBoer.
No nonsense. When I look to see him do interviews, I don't see a lot of BS. Mm-hmm. I see a guy who's straight and to the point. I think he's like that with his players. I really like the way he backed Martin Jones in the first round of the playoffs. Yep. It can go boom or bust. It went boom for them. One thing he told me that he said he really appreciated was, so he gets his first coaching job in Florida, and he's like, okay, I've done well in juniors. I'm a really hot candidate. He didn't say it that way, but other people say it about him. I was a really hot candidate. I'm like, I'm going to set the NHL on fire. It didn't work. You know, the thing that he said was, you are reminded that no matter how good you think you are as a coach, if you don't have players, you're not going to win. You know, he said coaches get a lot of attention, but it's a players' league. And it didn't work for him in New Jersey. And there were some people that thought that he was a bad hire in San Jose. But one person said to me, this is the best team he's ever going to be given, and he's going to do great. And I'm not surprised for that reason. Someone told me once that based on the way I know about you as a worker, that's a coach that you would love to play for, because he just tells you what you're expected to do, and now you better go out and do it. And I like that. I got a lot of time for him.
And what he was able to do regular season with subpar goaltending was outstanding.
Yep. And you know, also, so someone, we're looking forward for tonight's broadcast. We're taping this on Wednesday to release on Thursday, but Robert Bortuzzo, he scored his first playoff goal the other night in game two. You know the last playoff goal he scored? Was for the 2007 Kitchener Rangers of the Ontario Hockey League. His coach, Peter DeBoer.
Peter DeBoer.
Yeah.
And
we're trying to see if we can find it.
What a team that was, too.
They were pretty loaded.
That Peter had. I remember he had the great quote to me once when, I might have told this story on the podcast before, when he traded for Steve Downey. He brought him in from Peterborough. And this is when Downey was, you know, the wild child of the OHL. And I remember asking him on the air, I said, you know, what are you bringing in Downey? You got a Memorial Cup caliber team. It's an elite team in the CHL. This guy's wild, hurting kids, going to be suspended, going to cost your team. And he said, listen, as a head coach, I would rather have to tame a tiger than paint stripes on a kitty cat.
Yep, I'm with you there.
You can't paint stripes on a kitty cat.
By the way, people are going to complain that I'm not playing this game properly because I don't just say one word, but I don't do things by the rules. This is the way I do things.
I don't think anyone wants one word. Give us more than one word on Timo Meier.
Another guy who's going to get paid. The forgotten RFA.
Yeah, there's another one coming up in a second, but Timo Meier, your thoughts?
Just a horse, man. You know, San Jose, I know they keep a stat because I've ripped it out of Doug Wilson's hands a couple of times. They look at where they draft and how well they do, and they do really well.
True.
And the guy there who does a lot of their amateur, their lead is a guy named Tim Burke, who's from the Boston area. I don't know Tim Burke at all, but it's funny. One time someone said to me that Tim Burke should get more play to be a GM somewhere. And someone else said to me, Doug Wilson will kill you if you write that because he doesn't want to lose Tim Burke.
So technically you haven't written it.
Well, I've mentioned it before. Like, one thing that's really interesting there is that Joe Will, who is Doug Wilson's assistant general manager, he interviewed for the Pittsburgh GM job when Jim Rutherford got it.
Mm-hmm.
And I have had some people say to me that Wilson's in a really powerful spot there. He probably has as much power as any hockey executive in the league in his organization. And because of that, a lot of his people don't get promoted for jobs. But this person said to me, and this is an executive on another team, the general manager job is now becoming as much about managing up as it is about being a scout or picking players or things like that.
Yep.
Said those San Jose guys have to have seen things that they do because they're always good. And the thing that I do know the Sharks take the most pride about is they don't draft high, but they draft well. They find guys. You know, Meier, you know, Berkey talked about it the other night. We've talked about that deal, Shattenkirk and Oshie for Hurdle and the pick that would have been Timo Meier. And St. Louis was really angry when that deal didn't happen. But they wanted Meier. And now we see why. Earlier this year, when the Carlson trade was coming down, initially it was rumored that Meier was part of that deal. And I called someone, I think I can say this now, I called Claude Lemieux, who represents Meier, and I said, is he in the deal? And he says, I don't know, but we're hoping that Doug valued him enough to keep him. And we know that he sure did.
And we know one thing about San Jose as well is they value goals and they will pay for goals.
Yeah.
And where once upon a time, you know, you mentioned Claude Lemieux, his business partner is Peter Forsberg.
Yes.
And once upon a time we said, hold on a second, one of the top power forwards in the NHL is a Swede. And now we're on the precipice of saying one of the best power forwards in the NHL is from Switzerland.
Yes.
In Timo Meier. We'll finish on this name, Kevin LeBanc. You talk about finding players in the draft. Like, I look at Kevin LeBanc. Well, before I give you my thoughts, okay. Your thoughts on Kevin LeBanc.
Practice. The first thing I think about Kevin LeBanc is I think about practice. Because the story I was told about how the Sharks found this guy was his first year at OHL, Barry, the Colts, he wasn't playing a ton. And so someone from San Jose went to one of their practices, and he stayed out long, like working on a shot. It took like 200 to 300 shots, the story I was told.
Did that person notice the color of the pucks, by the way?
They didn't say anything to me.
Because he's an orange puck guy.
Is he really?
That's how he got the shot. He's an orange puck guy.
Ah,
big
well,
like hundreds of orange puck shots.
Well, they'll finish that in a sec.
Okay.
But the story I was told was the scout watched practice and went to the coaches and said, is that normal? And they said, oh, yeah, he's out there all the time. So they took their chance on him that year.
Mm-hmm.
And look what he's become. That whole San Jose team has become masters of changing the angles of their shots before they shoot it. Like, how many looks does LeBanc give? And I think Kelly's got something tonight about how Couture does the same thing. Anyway, why orange pucks?
They're heavier. And that's what this guy does. He's the orange puck kid. He fires and has fired hundreds, if not thousands, of orange pucks in practice. Because that's funny, because when you mention the word practice with Kevin LeBanc, we're singing from the same hymn book, because that's him. He is that guy, and I think he went into San Jose both off seasons because they wanted him to work on the game, defensive side of the puck. They wanted him there, and he did. Like you, I watched him a ton in Barry. Like, watch him play with Barry.
Oh, I'd be lying if I said I watched him a ton. Like, you watched
so
him
good,
more than I
right?
Did
played a couple of years the development program when Eichel was there. It's an interesting story too, right? Here's a family move from Slovakia to Staten Island. Dad played hockey in Slovakia, Milan, and he played the development program for a couple of years. Didn't go to college, went to, well, development program guys do, but went to the OHL with the Barry Colts, played under Dale Hawerchuk. And I looked at myself and I say, you know, this is a prospector's league. And you asked, you said what, you know, Timo Meier's going to get paid. Kevin LeBanc scored 14 goals this year. And every time I look at Kevin LeBanc, I say to myself, that guy's got 30 in him. Like, when I look at the way he plays and I look at that release, I say to myself, there's 30 goals in there.
One of the reasons that Burns and Carlson didn't play together on the power play is they wanted to get LeBanc on PP1.
Yeah.
I mean, that's pretty impressive, too.
And Thornton loves him.
It's an important guy to have on your side. What do you think it's better for in San Jose? Joe Thornton likes you or Joe Thornton hates you?
Joe Thornton likes you, no?
I'm just being an idiot.
Version 3814. You warmed up now?
Yeah, I'm warmed up.
You fully caffeinated?
Are we playing this other game that you were talking about?
Yeah, a little bit later on. You're going to love that.
Okay, no,
listen, it's kind of a slowish week around the podcast. So I'm going to gimmick it up a little bit.
It's playoffs. Well, you know what I was thinking also too, Jeff? We got to get some interviews done. We haven't done an interview in a while.
That is 100% true. A lot of that is because of my schedule and you guys have accommodated. And now that phase of my life is complete and my schedule will open up a little bit more.
Okay.
Thank you to you guys. Elliot's warmed up, so let's get right to it. 31 Thoughts brought to you by the next generation GMC Sierra Denali.
Morning, everyone. Thank you very much for coming down. As was released earlier this morning, we are extremely proud to announce Ralph Krueger as the 19th head coach in Buffalo Sabres history. Ralph is a great communicator and has a history of being a strong leader. He's had the opportunity to be a head coach of the National Hockey League, World Championships, World Cup, and Olympics. I think his past has shown that he has a great ability to interact with players and get the most out of a group. As we went through this process, we felt Ralph was going to be a great fit to be the next head coach of the Buffalo Sabres.
So the Buffalo Sabres found their man.
Yep.
Buffalo Sabres make their move. And this is a very out-of-the-box, non-traditional, although he does have a background, certainly with Edmonton, World Cup of Hockey as well. But this
Swiss hockey
this
team.
Swiss hockey as well. This falls into the category of this might be a swing for the fence, and it might be fantastic, and it might be a third pitch whiff, and you're back to the dugout. We don't know. I'm always interested in – this is why I was fascinated to see if Rickard Granberg ended up somewhere in the NHL this year, either as a head coach or an assistant coach. You were on this one early, talked about it, speculated about it. Give me your thoughts on Ralph Kruger, bench boss of the Buffalo Sabres.
You know, Buffalo, their last couple of hires, they tried Dan Bylsma, Stanley Cup champion, didn't work. They tried Phil Housley, hot assistant, didn't work. When you're a general manager, how many coaching hires do you get? I'm sure Jason Botterill is looking at this like, I have to get this one right, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it took a while, but I figured out with some help from people who reached out, and I appreciate it, all the connections. Ralph Kruger, Winnipeg.
Born in Winnipeg, yes.
Dr. Cal Botterill, Jason and Jennifer's father, a longtime sports psychologist who teaches at the University of Manitoba and also has worked in international hockey for Hockey Canada many times. I'm not sure of all the connections in terms of Hockey Canada and that, but they know each other. Apparently, the Krugers and the Botterills have a cottage on the same lake. I think it's Lake of the Woods, but I don't know for sure.
Okay.
So the families know each other. I believe also that Jason Botterill and Ralph Kruger shared the same agent, the late Don Baisley.
Don Baisley, out of Winnipeg.
Out of Winnipeg. So I think for a lot of us, when you look at it in that context, it makes a lot more sense. Jason Botterill, with what could be his last coaching hire, we don't know, is going with a guy he really knows. And the thing about Kruger is, and I've started to see some interviews, I saw The Athletic had one with Mark Streit and another with Thomas Vanek, and it confirms, I think, what a lot of us knew about him. Ralph Kruger is a relentlessly positive guy. And the Buffalo Sabres organization has been shrouded in negativity for a long time, because they just haven't done well.
Yep.
And he will change that. Now, the X's and O's will be important. I believe Steve Smith, who coached with Kruger in Edmonton, is going to stay on the staff, and I'm sure they'll go out and get someone else. But I just think that, A, it's someone Botterill knows well, and B, it is a guy who is positive. And we talked off the top in our word association about perseverance. Ralph Kruger, he's all about perseverance.
He's all about perseverance, indeed. And the Buffalo Sabres right now are all about youth, whether it's Eichel, whether it's Dahlin, whether it's your Tage Thompsons, and whether it's your Casey Mittelstats and your Alex Nylanders, and Ukko-Pekka Laukkanen just won the Tilson, is the top player in the OHL, playing with the Sudbury Wolves, have a fantastic netminder on the horizon there. Is this, again, we'll find out as soon as next season, the right style of coach for a very young team? Some of the common wisdom would be, you know, there can't be too much of a generation gap for these kids. I don't buy that argument myself, but some people think they need to see a birth certificate where the ages are more similar than different.
I think that's such BS. Like, I really do. You know, age is a number, okay? It's not how old you are. It's how much life you've got. Like, Jeff, how old are you?
I turned 50 in July.
Oh, you're older than me, eh?
49, dude.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, sorry.
It's so depressing. Like, you look better than me, and you're older than me.
The old devil.
Vegan, too. But you're younger than 50, right? Like
49,
No, no, no. Don't be a knob. Like, you know, you're younger than 50 at heart.
Oh, I'm still a goofball. I've barely matured.
But also, you've got, like, young family. You're an active guy. You're in good shape. You eat right. You do a lot of stuff that is not necessarily associated with being 50.
I don't even know what associated with 50. I don't feel like I'm close
to 50. Yeah, you feel young.
Yeah.
I'll be 49 in September, and I feel young. I don't feel 50. I feel good. I'm trying to get in better shape. I've been way too fat for too long. But the fact is that I feel really good. Like you, I have a young family, and I feel really good. I don't feel old. Ralph Kruger's 59. He's in great shape. He's upbeat relentlessly. Okay, if you look at the number and say 59, oh, too old. Like that, to me, that's just lame, limited, loser thinking. I see somebody who is willing to challenge himself, willing to adapt, will take a look at a team with Dahlin and a Eichel, like your two cornerstone players or young guys, and say, I don't care that they're 40 years younger than me. How am I going to get them to be better? And I think age is just a number. I think this is a guy who challenges himself to understand and be great no matter what the perceived challenges are. I don't worry about that. I don't worry about that at all.
What do we know about Ralph Kruger? We know about the go-around in the lockout year with the Edmonton Oilers, that spell at the end, 1-9, cost him probably a playoff spot.
Yep.
We know about the World Cup of Hockey. I don't think anybody thought that this, you know, Team Europe was going to do anything in that tournament. Next thing you know, they're playing in the final against Team Canada. But what do we know about Ralph Kruger?
Well, I mean, the one thing I know that the Oilers did not like about him from a coaching point of view was not his attitude, but there was something about his tactics they didn't like. Like, one of the things I was told was he had some things that he did spacing-wise that could work on the international ice but could not work in the NHL.
Okay.
There were just spaces they were assigned to protect that made sense on the bigger rinks but didn't make sense in the NHL rinks. I think you can fix that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I remember in 2006 we did the Olympics in Canada. That was the Olympics where Canada lost in the quarterfinals to Russia. In the round robin, they lost to Switzerland 2-0. And Kruger coached that team. Paul DiPietro scored both goals. They shut down Canada in that game. Canada could get nothing going. I think Martin Gerber was the goalie for that one.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's a guy who at the international surface, he knows how to play a style that can keep you competitive. You know, like I said, the Oilers felt that some of those things didn't work in the NHL. I'm sure he'll be better at fixing that this time around.
You see, hires like this really get me excited. And you think back to, here comes pretentious quote number 3 million here on this podcast from me. I read a lot of Schopenhauer at university, and I still do. I think he's a wonderful and underappreciated philosopher. And he would say, talent hits a target no one can hit, but genius hits a target no one can see.
Mm-hmm.
There's always been a conventional way to coach hockey teams, and a lot of the coaches continue to get, you know, wheeled in and wheeled out and revolved around, and there are a lot of familiar faces.
Yes.
We're waiting for a genius coach, aren't we? I'm not saying that Ralph Kruger is going to be a genius coach, but we know a lot about what we're getting when you make a safe hire. This is not a safe hire. This is a different hire, just like Gronberg would have been a different hire. When's the last time we had a genius coach? We've had really good coaches. We've had really talented coaches.
How many people...
You've seen genius hockey players.
Yes, but how many people have... we thought was a genius one year, and then next year, oh, they're not so much of a genius anymore.
Like, yeah.
All we do is we look at results, right? Results determine if you're a genius or not. You could have the best process.
No, I think if you're, you know, profoundly changed the way the game is played.
Yeah, but you don't know that till later.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. That's what gets me excited about a hiring like Kruger. Like, for whatever, I'm not going to grab one specific coach, but of all the names that we see each and every season when coaching positions become available – you pretty much know what you're getting. Sure, coaches will evolve and we'll learn and we'll go to all the conferences and pick up new things and talk about, you know, figuring out ways how to reach millennial hockey players. But we generally know what we're getting.
Yeah.
That's why I get excited when I see someone like Kruger in the mix in the NHL.
I understand. You know, it's different. And, you know, it's so funny, though, Jeff. Like, you get people out there saying, oh, I want something different. They always hire the same old person. And then... he gets hired. This is crazy. You can't do this.
Never coached before. He's going to be lost.
He's a soccer head.
Exactly. They play with a puck here, sir.
You know, every coaching hire is a risk.
Yeah.
Again, I go back to what we started the podcast with. I think to Jason Botterill, this is less of a risk than to a lot of other people because he knows this guy.
You know what's interesting? You look at the American Hockey League right now, and they're down to their Final Four as well.
They got bigger markets than the NHL does.
I know, it's crazy too, right?
And was it San Diego, Chicago, Toronto,
Diego,
and Charlotte?
Toronto and Chicago.
Which
and
league
Charlotte?
Is the NHL and which is the American Hockey League?
But look at the coaches that are involved. Dallas Aikens, Rocky Thompson, Vellucci, and Keefe.
Yeah.
All guys you could see in the NHL.
Yep.
And as we talk about coaches that can reach the quote-unquote younger player, they've all shown that they can.
Mm-hmm.
What's happening with some of these coaches? And we'll focus on some of the vacancies. And, you know, San Diego's playing against Chicago. So it's Dallas Aikens taking on Rocky Thompson here. What's happening in Anaheim?
You know, I don't know. I've always assumed it's Dallas Aikens until I'm told otherwise. But now we know they're going to interview some other candidates.
Lane Lambert.
John Shan reported that. You know, Lane Lambert is, I think, a guy who deserves a chance somewhere already.
Mm-hmm.
I heard they might talk to Todd Nelson, too.
Okay.
So... he's going to look around. The other guy I heard they might take a look at is Pascal Vincent, who's the coach
in
Manitoba. You know, it's funny. You know, in Toronto this year with the American Hockey League team, people are saying Sheldon Keefe did a better job this year than he did last year because last year's team was loaded, and this year he lost his two goalies on the eve of the season. But the same thing, I think, with Vincent. Last year, Manitoba had a really good team that went deep into the playoffs. This year, they had some pretty bad injuries, and Winnipeg had some situations where they had to call their guys up. And they did a charge in the second half of the season. They didn't go as far as they wanted, but they charged. People told me Vincent did a better job this year than last year. Same deal.
Hmm.
But I can't tell if this is a legitimate job is open search, and I'm going to talk to a lot of guys, or this is I'm just not handing the job to Dallas Eakins, and I want to hear what some people have to say.
How much are fact-finding interviews?
Well, that's what I'm trying to figure out. Not that Bob Murray's going to tell me. You know, he marches to the beat of his own drummer,
yeah.
And he's going to do what he thinks, you know, no matter what anyone else says, and I kind of admire that, really.
Do you have a thought on the other coaches that we mentioned, that Rocky Thompson, Chicago?
I heard that there was a team last year that asked for to interview Rocky Thompson as for an NHL assistant job, and Vegas said no.
Hmm.
Head coach, we'll consider it. Assistant, X gets a square.
But Vellucci in Charlotte.
Well, he's going to be available. We've talked about it.
Yep.
They had a great year. I wouldn't be surprised at all if he's on an NHL bench somewhere as an assistant.
Sticking with coaches in the American Hockey League, Jay Woodcroft did a real nice job with Bakersfield this year, the AHL affiliate,
yes,
for the Edmonton Oilers.
I think he's going to the Kings.
What happens there?
I kind of wondered if he would want to stay in Edmonton or in the AHL just to carve his own more of his own identity and things like that.
Yeah.
But I was told that, you know, he will probably go to L.A. because now in Edmonton, with a new regime, depending on who the coach is, you know, he's probably far away from getting a shot in that organization, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I know that L.A. wants him, so I wouldn't be surprised if he ends up back there. Like, I mean, guys tell me that one of the nicknames for him is Todd McClellan's brain, so I could see he ends up back in L.A.
What's happening with Ottawa and their head coach search? I'm going to ask you this every single week
until the podcast is done. I think we're getting close. I think DJ Smith is very much in the mix.
Yeah.
Someone told me that Nate Lehman, they thought.
Providence.
Is very much in the mix. I've heard Jacques Martin's name a lot. I think one of the questions they've asked internally is, you know, we already have Mark Crawford here. If we're going to go that route, do we just keep Mark?
Mm-hmm.
Rick Bowness is getting interviewed this week. I kind of got the sense that at the beginning I thought Martin was the guy. I'm not as certain now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think guys like Smith and Lehman have a legit shot at this.
Off the coaching page, I want to go over a couple of things you wrote about in the most recent edition of 31 Thoughts. Vegas and their cap issues.
Yeah.
And there's still a William Karlsson deal to do this offseason. You mentioned they don't want to hand Miller off to someone for nothing, but how do you get out of cap prison?
Well, one of the things someone mentioned to me after they saw 31 Thoughts is, you know who's still on their roster? David Clarkson. And he thinks that David Clarkson gets dealt this year. Like, he said
to me, David Clarkson contract.
Yeah,
we're on the
same
page.
He's got 1 year left. Like, he said to me, if he was Ottawa, he'd be extorting Vegas on that deal.
And they do have a nice prospect pool.
Yeah, or a pick, whichever you prefer. So the David Clarkson deal could be part of this. Colin Miller, it's also a playing issue there. Like, he wasn't playing in the playoffs. So he's got a good contract. I could see that one happening. You know, I wrote Carlson in there, and I wrote Marchessault in there. There were a couple guys said to me, there's no way they're dealing Marchessault.
Sure.
I said, okay, it makes sense. I mean, he's a good player, great contract. The Carlson one only happens if, you know, they can't sign him and they don't want to lose him as an unrestricted free agent. He's got one more year.
Anything new on Seattle? Now, they're interviewing for a number of positions.
Hextall, Hunter, Bill Zito, and I wouldn't be surprised if there's more. I think they thought that Ken Holland was going to be their guy.
Yeah, you mentioned that last week.
I think they're kind of like, we're slowing down the process now because they lost two guys really quickly, and they're like, we're just going to slow this down a bit.
I want to do more on Bill Zito because that's a name that a lot of people may not be familiar with, but whose name pops up in a lot of these searches. But we'll do it on another podcast.
He did
get
interviewed in Edmonton, by the way. I didn't put that in my notes, but apparently he was in there.
Again, on another podcast, we'll do something more on Bill Zito. But for those that may not know who Bill Zito is, give us a quick little 411.
So Bill Zito used to be a player agent. Marcus Leto is the agent who now represents a lot of those clients that Bill Zito had. Tuukka Rask was one of their guys. He was on the ice in Vancouver in 2011 when Boston won because one of his biggest early clients was Tim Thomas. He fought for Tim Thomas. And, you know, a lot of Zito's guys came through Finland, and that's where his connection with Jarmo Kekalainen was, and Tim Thomas played in Finland. Yep. Like, he was on the ice with Thomas when they won in 2011, and Thomas was very thankful to Zito for getting him back into the NHL and sticking with him for all those years. Boy, he's a tough negotiator. Like, so is Jarmo. I have to tell you, like, people who say that they've negotiated with Columbus, they either really respect those guys or they really hate those guys. Like, those guys grind you in Columbus. They really do. And
George McPhee has that rep, too.
Yes, he does. George, same deal. And, you know, the thing is that Columbus pushes him. Like, some guys in the league, they get upset because they feel that their GMs never push them, never pitch them for other jobs. Columbus does that. You know, Davidson did that. Kekalainen did that. They push their guys like, oh, there's an opening. You should talk to our guy.
Hmm.
You know, the only thing I worry about for Zito is that he is a guy who's now been in a lot of places and hasn't got the job. And you never want to be that guy. I don't think it's a black mark against him. I don't think that means he's a bad guy or anything like that. Hmm. But, you know, like, you don't want to be that guy.
Ever thought on Brendan Shanahan's extension, 6 years, anything, any fly paper on this one?
Well, just that I had a feeling it was getting done because when the Ranger job came open, in addition to Davidson, his was the first name I thought of. You know, he worked in New York. He played in New York at the end of his career. He lived there, obviously, for a while. And someone said to me, don't go down that road. It's getting done in Toronto.
Hmm.
And I'm sure he got a big raise. His previous number was around 2.5. So I'm sure it's higher than that.
How does he make ends meet? Okay, quick thought on the – it's always tricky during playoffs when we record this podcast because there's a game tonight. It's game 3, San Jose and St. Louis. And so something may happen, which you will not hear a comment from us on it because this podcast will come out on Thursday. But maybe a quick thought on what we're seeing so far in this final four edition of the Stanley Cup playoffs.
To me, the thing that really stood out was I've never seen Justin Williams lose his cool.
Pause on that. We've seen Brad Marchand unglue players before, like guys that would surprise us.
Yeah.
What surprises me is it's not just Brad Marchand. You start to lose it on Torrey Krug. No disrespect to Torrey Krug. We mentioned off the top of the podcast, too. But you can understand Brad Marchand getting on your nerves. You get that. But it's against players like Torrey Krug, too. Why are you throwing an elbow at Torrey Krug?
Frustration. Maybe they see it slipping away. You know, the other thing that somebody brought up to me today was, maybe it's the end. You know, is Justin Williams going to play next year?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you made a good point. Like, guys like that, so he's got three cups. It doesn't mean they're satisfied. They crave for that fourth one, right?
Yeah.
And you said maybe this is the end, and he just hates to see it ending like this. Now, I think if he wants to play another year, he'll be able to.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. This wouldn't be the end because there will be no contract for him at the end of the
although
season.
Although that's a different organization. Like, I heard you had Nick on today, and he talked about, you know, some of the huge choices that they're going to, and all the people who are there without contracts for next year. Like, we don't know what this Carolina organization is going to do. But I would think if he wanted to play next year, there'd be an opportunity for him. But I just thought that somebody who watched him on Tuesday night, watching him like that, his reaction was, boy, this might be the end of his career, and he's grasping to find a way to change it and keep it going.
Anything about St. Louis and San Jose jumping out at you?
That's a tough series. You know, Robert Bartuzzo is one of the stealth, really popular guys around. Like, people like that guy a lot.
Unless your name is Malkin.
I understand that. But, like, people really like Robert Bartuzzo. They say he's just a really friendly, funny guy. I know that there were a lot of people who saw him score that goal the other night, and they were like, couldn't happen to a better guy. Like, just great guy. They were so happy for him. Ryan Whitney, I think, told me about him. Like, really good guy.
Yeah, love him.
Yeah. And I think he's, you know what, I think he's a big Hockey Night in Canada guy, too.
All right, then. Another check mark of the box.
Positive,
there.
Yeah.
Robert Bartuzzo, we're going to step away and come back with a goofy little game and some of your questions at hashtag Ask31. Don't go anywhere. Thoughts, the podcast, is brought to you by the next generation GMC Sierra Denali, complete with the world's first six-function multi-protocol gates. Hockey season is over for most, but spring is here, which means baseball, soccer, and road trips. The Sierra Denali's gate comes with a built-in load stop to keep whatever you're traveling with in place, and turns into a step for easier access. And once you arrive, it can also become a work surface that includes a power outlet. So whether you're loading a tackle box, working on a project, or tailgating at the game, we've got you covered. GMC Sierra Denali. We are professional grade. Okay, I hope you're going to like this.
Okay.
And I say that both to you, Elliot, and whomever is listening right now.
All right.
So in the spirit of 31, I want to call this segment 3 plus 1.
Okay, I'm getting a pen.
Oh, yeah, you might need a pen. You might want to write a couple of things down here because you have to determine what's true and what's false.
Okay.
So I'm going to read you four statements.
Okay.
You're going to tell me which one of them is false.
Okay.
This is a very simple premise. We've all seen bits like this before, but let's try it out on the podcast.
Okay.
Okay. This is a big shine spot for the big brain of Elliot Friedman. Four statements about hockey. Which one's false? Number one, Dale DeGray, who's now the general manager of the Owen Sound Attack of the OHL, when he was a player in the IHL, was once traded for cash in order to cover a team's hotel bills. Okay? That is statement number one. Statement number two, the New York Rangers were the first team to broadcast home games to the local market. Statement number three. I'm saying this slowly as I watch Elliot try to write these things
down.
No,
go ahead. I'm not that dense.
Okay. Statement number three. When Logan Couture was born, the delivering nurse was Bernadette Dvorsky, mother of NHL officials Paul and Greg Dvorsky.
Okay.
Statement four. The first hockey nets, we're going way back here, 1899, were two posts in the ice. Netting was added to those posts by hockey-playing fishermen in Halifax before the turn of the century. So the Dale DeGray question, traded for hotel bill cash, the Rangers home broadcast, Logan Couture, and hockey-playing fishermen in Halifax. Which one of these four statements is false?
I think I've heard the Logan Couture one before, so I'm crossing out Logan Couture.
You are correct. Bernadette Dvorsky in Guelph, the delivering nurse when Logan Couture was born. This kid was born to play in the NHL.
The Dale DeGray one sounds true to me.
The Dale DeGray story.
Yes.
Is true.
Yes.
That was when he was traded from the Cleveland Lumberjacks to the Indianapolis Ice. Larry Gordon was the owner, pretty shrewd and frugal. He bought the Muskegon Mohawks for a dollar, moved them to Cleveland, and renamed them the Lumberjacks. Dale DeGray was a really high-paid IHLer, and they moved him, and they used the cash to cover hotel expenses. Dale DeGray, by the way, traded for Peter Sikora in the IHL, for those of you that collect such trivia. But yes, those two are correct.
Okay, so that leaves me the last two. The mm-hmm. Rangers, the first team to broadcast the home game in the local market,
yep.
Or the first hockey nets had two posts and the hockey-playing fishermen
of Halifax were the first to put nets on them.
Well, I have to tell you, this is not my final answer yet, but I am questioning number four because I do believe the part with the nets having two posts, but hockey-playing fishermen in Halifax putting them on mm-hmm. does sound like a Jeff Merrick creation. Mm. Like, that is something you would think of.
I'm trying to dog-face you right now, yeah, not give you any indication.
Yeah, I know. I got to tell you, the Rangers one, like, I could see that being true because New York is such a big market and a lot of things, television first, kind of happened in and around New York. Now, when you said the first team to broadcast home games, is that TV or
TV,
radio?
TV, not radio.
Okay.
This is television.
Oof. Come on, I'm all trying to build up some ground. I am going to go with the hockey-playing fishermen as true and the Rangers being false.
You, Elliot Friedman, are 100% correct. Nails it.
We need some good music. Amel, you got to put some good music.
Wow.
There, man.
Okay, so the big brain of Elliot Friedman wins the first one. The Rangers weren't the first. Do you know who the first was?
First of all, I just want to say for the record, we are never playing this game again. I am retiring undefeated.
That was good. The irony of the whole thing was, when you look at what happened under Bill Wirtz, Chicago was the first to broadcast home games on WBKB 46 and 47. Later, of course, the Wirtz family believed that broadcasting home games to the home market would hurt ticket sales, and so they kept people away from their TV sets to watch the Chicago Blackhawks. One thing I do want to mention, too, and this is this is kind of funny. So the Dale DeGray one. So this story has been out there for a while, and I've heard it a couple of different places about being traded to cover off hotel bills. And so I called Dale earlier this week. We had a wonderful conversation. He's, outside of being just a delightful guy to talk to, he's a really smart hockey dude. Like, he's forward-thinking, visionary kind of guy. And he's able to, in a very small market, put together highly competitive teams consistently. That's always one of the things I've been impressed about.
Mm-hmm.
But so Sam McKee is a producer at Sportsnet 590 The Fan, and is a wonderful guy. And he's from Owen Sound, and he's a big Owen Sound Attack fan. And whenever I see Sam, we always say, best fries in the O. In Owen Sound, best fries in the O. And
do you eat French fries?
What's that?
Do you eat French fries?
I do. I like a French fry. I enjoy a French fry.
Okay.
So I mentioned this casually to Dale, because we were talking about radio and we're talking about Hockey Central at noon. And I said, yeah, there's this producer there, Sam McKee's big, from Owen Sound, big fan. And we always look at each other and we say, you know, Bayshore Arena, best fries in the O. And Dale said to me, that's funny, because this year, the guy that makes the fries, we drafted his kid.
Oh, so that's a good way to keep the fry guy happy.
Aiden Yard is the young man's name, plays Grey Bruce Highlanders. His father's dad, Jeff, works at the rink. Obviously, I think he also works at a Montana's, is a guy that makes the fries. And so they drafted, and I think I'm just broadcasting to one right now. I am actually just broadcasting Sam McKee, who will find this interesting. Sam McKee, Dale DeGray, GM of your Owen Sound Attack, drafted the guy's son.
That's awesome.
The guy
that's
that
a
makes
great story.
The fries. So there you go. So good job. Well done. Mm-hmm. Okay, you ran the table. Did you really have to think about it that
yes,
hard? That was building drama. That
yes,
was your brain spooling. What was that?
You, that hockey playing fisherman was the thing that threw me. It was just such a detail.
Yeah.
Because your brain is so warped that you could have made that up yourself. That's what threw me.
Brain cells with various things over the years. So, yes, it does sound like something I would say. Okay.
Can I just do a couple shout-outs before we do some
Ask
31s?
Okay.
Just for some things that people – I want to say thanks to some people who've sent DMs about stuff they've heard on the podcast and adding notes in before. First of all, at Jordan Scardetta, he was listening to your bit last week about a different act you could throw into an NHL All-Star game.
Yeah.
And
oh, by the way, legendary Stardust Cowboy did not go over very well with the audience.
I was like, Steph was like, what on earth are you listening to? So Jordan Scardetta pointed out that Lionel Richie played at the Australian Football League Grand Final in 2010 because I guess someone else canceled, so they needed an act, and he was there, so he played. And Scardetta said, like, normally he would not be a person invited to this.
Who would they normally have at an event like that?
Well, there, if you go through Google, like, there's a whole list of people, like bands with Australian connections.
Okay.
Like
Olivia Newton-John
did it, kind of thing. You can find it on YouTube, Lionel Richie AFL Grand Final. As Jordan wrote, he absolutely killed it, and it was good. Like, I listened to it. It was really good. Now, another one is at Eric Simonis, who we told a story a couple weeks ago about Winston Morgan being kicked off the Indiana basketball team and his job being saved because the moment he was kicked off, he stopped and he wished another coach good luck, and Bob Knight thought that was a great character event. Well, Eric Simonis, at Eric Simonis, he works with Winston Morgan, small world, and shared the podcast with him. And the other guy I want to thank, and I'm not going to say what was in it yet, but Craig G is his Twitter name.
Okay.
And he sent me something, and I just want to acknowledge it and say thanks, and hopefully we'll reveal it at another time.
Okay. Stay tuned for that information on another podcast. Meanwhile, finish up with hashtag Ask31. This comes to us. We'll kick off with a Philadelphia Flyers question. comes to us from Brooksy. With already major changes.
Is it Larry Brooks?
It is not Larry Brooks.
Oh, okay.
You know who this guy's name is? And he's a wonderful guy, and I know him, so I want to make sure I get this on. I met him when he first worked at the Hockey Hall of Fame. His name is Brooks Robinson.
Nice.
Great baseball name, too, nice, buddy. Man. Great guy.
1955 to 77.
With already major changes behind the bench, what does the summer look like for the Philadelphia Flyers, and what are the odds they keep their first-round pick with the prospect cupboard already full? Hashtag Ask31.
I think they've got a lot of options. I think they're going to look at a lot of things. Look, Alain Vigneault is a win-now hire. They're in win-now mode. They do have a lot of D. I could see them moving one of their D to get something they feel they need. And I think they're going to do stuff to help them get back into the playoffs, for sure.
Remove a D or add a D? And the reason I
could
ask
go
that,
either way.
The reason I ask that is I do wonder about Winnipeg with Jacob Trouba.
I do think that Trouba's getting traded. I wondered if Winnipeg would keep him next year, with a year to go UFA, and just go for it.
Mm-hmm.
But most people who know better than I do think he's getting dealt.
From Jonathan C., how much stock do scouts and GMs take into account the World Championship when looking at trade value of players, bracket Nylander, or player development, bracket Demko?
I don't know if it's a huge amount. First of all, it's a game played in a different surface. But the one thing I do know that happens is they have seen players like Sidney Crosby, I think it was the 2015 Worlds,
mm-hmm.
right before they won their two cups. People have told me that that changed Crosby a lot for the better. He kind of went there and had a great time and rediscovered a bit of passion at a time where he was down in his career. One thing that guys have told me is that they will see a guy play there, and if they really feel after a rough year, they have a good tournament, it can do a lot of good things. I think most of where it happens, honestly, Jeff, is you look at some of the European guys who may be trying to come over to North America and see how they play against the North American teams and say, can that person's game translate here? Will it work?
Remember when I worked with Bill Waters, former assistant GM of the Maple Leafs, he told me the reason they signed Robert Reichel was because of the World Hockey Championship.
Yeah,
they
happens.
Saw him at the Worlds, and that was it. They thought it was going to translate back.
There's a kid right now, he's not a kid, he's 26 years old. Joakim Nygaard is playing for Sweden. I'm sure there's teams over there looking at him and seeing how he plays in some of the North American games.
Colin Hartford submits, Elliot was on an Edmonton radio show, and host Bob Stauffer had mentioned Alex Iafallo uses the U2 song I Will Follow as his goal song. I didn't know players had goal songs, just team goal songs. Any other players have a goal song? I think we'll start to see more of that.
Yes.
Like individual songs for players scoring.
You know, the Leafs obviously had a team song. You know, hockey is obviously more team than individual, but I agree with you. I think that's going to change.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know of any other specific players that do. I admit it's not something that I follow a lot.
Now that you've mentioned it, here come the tweets.
Now that I've mentioned it, here come the tweets, but I'm all for it. Like
Yeah, same.
I love it. I mean, I love baseball when everybody comes up with their own music and the pitchers all. Remember when Billy Wagner got signed with the Mets and he used Enter Sandman? The Yankees went bananas because that's Mariano Rivera's music. Can't bring that into the same city. I love that stuff.
All right. From Monoliths, with the speculation of the New York Rangers being active in the RFA markets,
yep.
The rumor that they'd be front runners for Panarin and the need for help on defense, who would be a realistic RFA target? Boston doesn't have a ton of room. Bullseye on local boy and Ranger fan McAvoy. What do you see the Rangers doing?
Well, first of all, I don't know if I would call them the favorite for Panarin. I mean, everybody's wondering about Florida. I think they're definitely in there on Panarin, but I know the whole Joel Quenneville thing has really thrown a wrench into that. A lot of people are kind of saying, look, if Florida wants them both, they might actually get them both. We'll see. That's still to be determined. I got to think that if the Rangers are going to look at anybody in particular, it's going to be Point.
Really?
Yeah, I got to think that if you're going to do an RFA, it's probably going to be Point. Which RFA would you like to have if you could have any one of them?
See, I love Point because A, he's creative. B, he's great 5-on-5, great on the power play. And the thing that differentiates him from a lot of the other group twos as well is he's a scoring threat. That's what puts it over the top for me for Point.
Well, I'm just saying, and you know that you have to get the player, right? So you got to do the four. You got to do the four first.
From M. Faulkner, I noticed Bob McKenzie call out Fried for making the call on Kruger to Buffalo. In a business, in part, about being first, what is competition like around Bob, Dregs, Kipper, Fried, etc.?
Well, first of all, I didn't know Bob had done that, so I'm going to send him a note saying thanks. I mean, we're competitive. I know there have been times I've been working on things and someone else will get it. And if it's not from the Sportsnet team, I'll be like, damn it. And I'm sure it happens on their end too. And we're all friends. Like, we all get along really well, but we're competitive. It's like this is our game, I guess, for lack of a better term. And you want to win the game, but we're friendly. We all get along, but you know, we are competitive. Like, you know, they want to get more stories, you know, or better stories. We want to get more or better stories. But when we see them, we all get along. It's probably like a lot of athletes. You compete against each other, but when you're not competing, you have respect for each other and you get along pretty well.
Over the course of your employment in sports, in your career, one of the profound changes that I think we're all on the same page about is the complete uselessness of trying to embargo news. But when you started in the industry, I mean, there was, you know, we saw this in news in Canada. You hung on to the big story until Peter Mansbridge presented it on The National.
Or you put it out in your paper the first thing the next morning.
Right. Or with Hockey Night in Canada, that's going to get, it's a story that you have a sense of on the Friday and it's happening, but we're going to hold it until Saturday for Hockey Night in Canada. Is that the biggest change that you've seen?
There's no question. Like, there have been times I've gotten things late in the week and I'm like, can I hold this for Saturday night? And you just know it's so much harder now. One of the biggest frustrations that a lot of people we cover has is that. It's that it used to be that, okay, like if you're the GM of a team and I call you and I say, you know, Jeff, I've got this big story I'm working on, you would know that if I was working in print, which was the king for a long time, you hadn't till the morning. You know, what's your deadline? My deadline's 5 o'clock. Okay, I'll get back to you before five. And you knew you could prepare everybody for the morning. I've had people say to me, like, you know, Elliot, that's BS. You gave me like 10 minutes heads up, or you only gave me a couple hours heads up. And my reaction is, if it's only 10 minutes heads up, I'm like, you know, this is happening. I'm just trying to give you a heads up so you know I've got it.
This is a courtesy?
Yeah. I try to give the courtesy. But sometimes now it's only 2 or 3 hours and they're like, Elliot, that's BS. Like, you know, like 2 or 3 hours, that's not enough. And I'm like, I'm sorry, but the world has changed now. That's the way it is now. I don't like it either, to be honest, but it's a different world and we all have to adapt. It has led to some big issues. I'm not going to say who it was, but there was a trade this year and I had it. And I sent a note to both teams involved. I sent it to the GMs, the PR people, a couple of other people I know in the organization. I said, look, I have this and I'm going to send it out. And one of the people reacted very poorly and told me to lose his number. I was like, okay. And I should say that him and I, you know, we've walked a fine line with each other before. It's fine. Like, not everybody is going to like it. And in this job, sometimes people get angry at you. You know, I really try not to let it affect my coverage. I understand that not everybody, you know, my grandma always said, who could not like you? But not everybody is going to like you. The fact that news happens so quick and you can't always let people react to it as well as you would like, it affects relationships. But unfortunately, the world has changed and it's adapt or die.
From Steve Ness, who's got a great handle, at Quick Ness. It's great because he's a runner.
Okay.
There was a really good article on The Athletic this week about Robert Thomas living with the Tkachuk family.
Yep.
If you were a rookie in the NHL today and got to pick a veteran to live with, who would you pick?
I think it would have to be either Joe Thornton or Brent Burns.
Why?
Because they're hilarious, interesting guys. Could you imagine what it would be like to live with Brent Burns and all his kids?
And all his snakes and all his lizards.
I spent time with those guys once.
In Minnesota, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah, or you go to the ranch in Texas.
Mm-hmm.
This year, so he plays his 1,000th game, and San Jose gives him, what, like the male and female antelope?
Yeah.
Like, how awesome was that? Like, to me, that's an organization that really knows their guys,
sure,
right? I would have to pick one of those two guys. What about you? Who would you pick?
Chara.
That's a good one,
I'd pick Zdeno Chara, yeah, just because, as far as work ethic goes and an interesting human being and learning things from.
Great call.
To me, Chara, all day long. We get this every now and then, and let's just, because part of the podcast is, how does this work? Mm-hmm. Mark Hayward submits, can you explain how the offer sheet process works?
Yes. So there's if you go to my previous edition of 31 Thoughts, which is pinned to the top of my Twitter page, right near the bottom, I think it's thought number 30, is a list of all of this year's thresholds. And basically the way it works is the average annual value of the contract is determines, you know, how much you have to pay. And the highest level, which is over 10-something million, is 4 first rounders. Now, you have to have your own draft picks. Like, for example, say you've traded your first rounder. You can't trade for someone else's first rounder and say, this is the first round pick I'm giving up. It has to be yours. So if you've traded it, you can try and trade for it back to do an offer sheet.
Brian Burke did that, I believe, when they were going to threaten an offer sheet
on
with
Kessel.
The Bruins on Kessel. So they got Hayes back from that pick for Hayes in the Chicago deal back?
Something like that. I can't remember exactly what it is right here, but you're right. It was something like that. The other one, too, was the year that the Bruins took Trent Frederick late in the first round. They had traded their second rounder, and they were considering trading that pick to get their second rounder back because I think they were considering offer shooting Jacob Trouba. Something like that was going on. The key thing here, Mark, is that offer sheets, there's one final trick, and that is that the AAV is determined by the highest 5 years. So if you offer someone a 7-year offer sheet, for the terms of what you have to give up, it's determined by a 5-year average. That's one trick you have to be aware of.
By the way, the Bruins took Trent. That was, raised a couple of eyebrows. That was the Buffalo draft. That was Austin Matthews.
Mm-hmm.
And that was an interesting pick. A lot of people thought, he's probably a second rounder. That's where Boston can get him. I remember talking to someone in Boston who said, we had intel that Anaheim was going to take him at 30.
Yeah.
And so we jumped up and took him one before. Anaheim ended up taking Sam Steele.
By the way, I was listening to you on Hockey Central today, and how typical of Burke, like, to throw out a fake
list. You like that story?
Oh, my God. That's
okay,
so Burke-y.
That's the... In his mind, the Chris Pronger deal, it's the Alexander Daigle draft year. And so the story goes, San Jose was drafting second overall. They ended up trading that pick to Hartford. But Brian Burke, he's told the story a couple of times, has personally left behind a phony Hartford Whalers draft list at the hotel where the San Jose Sharks were staying, where Dean Lombardi could find the list that, oh, look, these idiots, they've left behind their draft list, and here's their booklet. It was a phony list of where they valued different players. Now, Lombardi maintains that he never saw it, though. But it is a very Brian Burke thing to do.
Well, Lombardi was probably not admitting because he's like, I can't believe Brian's this dumb that this would be his list.
Okay, last one.
All right. You got to go.
I know. I got a baseball game to coach. Mike Murphy. I've always been fascinated by the variety of things trainers and equipment managers are ready to supply players with behind the bench. Bubblegum, the odd banana. What are some of the more unique items that NHL trainers have made part of their routine? You know what? You know who I'd love to get on the podcast? I don't know if you follow him on Twitter. You follow Dana Hines?
Yeah, I do.
Would love to get him on.
Yeah,
I don't
he
know.
Would do it too.
I don't, would he
I bet
do
you,
it?
I bet you he would. Like, if it's up to him, he would do it. He's a really nice guy.
And he's got a great Twitter feed, at Real Dana Hines. He's the
There's
head
a
equipment
Buffalo
manager.
Trainer who does it too. He puts up his.
It's great.
I love it.
Stuff like that. If you don't follow him, at Real Dana Hines, head equipment manager for the Pittsburgh Penguins. And it's just, here's our day-to-day routine. And here's some snapshots from Penguins room. Here's the, you know, here's me sharpening skates. Here's me, oh, the new tape has come in. Like, tiny little geeky things like that.
I have a story about this. And it's a story that makes me look bad, so I know you guys will like it. Earlier in my career, when I was working at the Score, you know, before the Raptors hired Chuck Swirsky, they had openings in their play-by-play broadcast, right? Mm-hmm. And there was a year where they had John Saunders, the late John Saunders, couldn't do some games, and they needed someone to do some games. So I called play-by-play of a few Raptor games. And I will say right out, Chuck was... Like, I applied for that job the next year, and they gave it to Chuck, and he was a much better hire for what they needed at that time than I was. But I called a few games, and there was one game I went to go do a game in Orlando, and I cut myself on my lip shaving, and I couldn't get it to stop.
Oh, I've done that.
So,
Oh,
I can't remember the name of the Raptor trainer. And because, you know, when you cut yourself on your lip, it takes a long time.
Did you get the flag of Japan with the piece of paper, the toilet paper
I wasn't doing that. But I went to the rink. It wasn't big, but it was bleeding. Like, it was, you could see it. Like on TV, it would be noticeable. And his name was Brian. I can't remember his last name. And he said, I can take care of this. He did like a spray glue on my lip.
Really?
And it stopped the bleeding. The Raptors, the coaches, and the PR staff, they loved it. They were like, we should charge you for this. But he had to put spray glue on my lip. And I was like, the best part about it was, you know, I'm going to let you do this, but is this in any way toxic? And he goes, we'll find out.
Only one way to find out. Best of luck, son. Good luck with the career. Would love to get someone like Dana Hines on the
we'll
podcast.
We'll do that. That'd be great. He would be great. That's a great guest idea.
All right. Anything else to conclude? By the way, congratulations on winning the first edition of 3+1.
There'll be plenty of L's in the future, I have a feeling.
It's pretty good. I've already got a backlog of a few of them. It came to me the other day. I just started gunning them down. You know what? It's just a way for me to empty my tank.
Why? Really, like, honestly, Jeff, like, that's why I enjoy doing this podcast with you. Like, I never would think of something like that. So I'm glad that you think of stuff like that.
Trying to stay relevant. You going to do that button up on your shirt, by the way, before you go home?
No, you know what? I'm going to go for a walk, an hour walk. We got a few hours to the broadcast tonight. We're not meeting till 6. So I'm going to go for a walk and, you know, just...
Feel good about yourself?
I do. I feel great today.
You know what my wife calls that move?
What's that?
Chick repellent.
You know what? I got a lot of moves over the years. We've been chick repellent.
And that will wrap up. Thanks to our producer, Emil Delich. We will leave you. Oh, by the way, Emil said I'm approaching you-know-what status.
What's that?
What do you think?
Because you're almost 50?
No, like because I'm such a good guy. What status am I approaching now?
Oh,
Shulman.
Oh yeah,
I think I might be his favorite guy.
Like, I gotta tell you,
I'm approaching Dan Shulman's status with Amel. Yeah,
he brings Amel all the free stuff, and he's like, "You guys never give me anything for free."
Mm-hmm. I want to remind everybody, by the way, the Memorial Cup
this year. We give you our love for free, Amel.
Memorial Cup this year in Halifax, opening game Friday, 8 o'clock Eastern. Prince Albert facing off against a hometown Halifax Mooseheads, 8 o'clock Eastern. Ryan and Rory, by the way, on the Tape to Tape podcast, which drops today, Thursday. Special guest to preview the tournament, Sam Cosentino of our draft coverage, our junior hockey coverage. Sam just an all-round.
Sam knows his stuff, man.
God, he's fantastic. All right, so check out that podcast. And don't forget the Memorial Cup this year in Halifax. Action starts 8 o'clock Eastern on Friday. We leave you now with Mounties. Rougeos? Oh, not Rougeos. Okay. Three-piece Canadian band just released their sophomore album, Heavy Meta. From that record, here's Flags of Convenience by Mounties.